This week on the Donut Box Podcast, hear about how we talk about our tattoos, our first tattoo experience, and what our tattoos mean.
Then we go into other life experiences, other stories that Chris and I have gone through that are near and dear to our heart, getting a little bit into my mind, into Chris's mind, and just talking about anything and everything. So, man, I don't think there's anything else to do besides roll the intro and get into the good stuff. Hi, I'm Micah.
And I'm Chris.
And we've been friends for over 20 years.
Surprisingly, we haven't killed each other yet. Years ago, we started our own variety show, and it's...
Now that we're adults, we decided to give it another try. And you know what it says, like in the movie, life is like a box of donuts. You never know which one's gonna be the next one.
Wait a second, it's chocolates. Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're gonna get.
Oh, right. Okay, well, let's start the show.
This is the Donut Box Podcast. Well, man, it's another week, another day, another 50 cents, as they say. You ever have an old man saying, like, yep, yep, another day, another 50 cents.
Or 25 cents, or a dime. Yeah, I've heard that.
Dude, I just be, and we've talked about this before, but I'll have old man sayings whenever I see someone, and I'll say, well, I guess they just let anybody in here.
or well, look what the cat dragged in.
Or it's like, how you doing? If I was doing any better, I'd be you.
Or like, I've even heard it's just like, I'm doing good for the shape that I'm in. Just like, okay.
This is one that I do when people are like, I'll be like, well, you know, and they'll be like, not much. I'll be like, well, that's more than me.
Yeah, you gotta have all your good ones. As long as it's not alive and kicking, I'm okay.
Oh, Micah hates that one, and we've talked about that because of Punky. He hates that.
Yeah, I heard that every day. It was a rival salesman, and it's just like, that was his answer every time. It's like, how you doing? I'm alive and kicking. Just like,
mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is a free flow episode, by the way. So we are just talking and conversing, and we have some topics and questions that we're going to ask each other. But real quick, I ran into someone that worked at Boot Corral.
Did?
She's actually one of my staff members, and she was like, yeah, when I worked at Boot Corral. And I was like, when did you work there? And she was like, 2022. And I was like, oh, yeah. And she was like, did you work with Jim? And I was like, oh, yeah. And she was like, yeah, he said that he would fire me because he didn't like the way that my eye makeup was done one day. And I was just like, yep.
That sounds
like old Jim at the Boot Corral.
Sounds like nothing's changed over there at all. Except for now, and this is just a side bit, when we were working there, especially when I was a salesman, it was commission based, and now I've heard it's all hourly, which definitely wouldn't be worth it to me. Just doing an hourly rate, having to put up with all that crap, that would be terrible. Which, you know, it is a little bit past our Christmas time, and I would like to shout out, before we get too deep in this episode, to our retail workers. You guys, it's every year I be thinking about y'all, because I've been there before. Chris has been there before. Christmas at retail is always a very hard time of year. You guys are working. Everybody else is relaxing and chilling while you guys are working. And so really appreciate it. In fact, I try not to shop this time of year just for that reason, just so that I don't give you guys the extra hassle and things like that, because I just know how it is. So shout out to you guys, because I know it's tough.
Yeah, I was literally thinking that a week ago. Well, I guess over a week ago, because a week ago would have been Christmas, but over a week ago when I was Christmas shopping, of like, man, these retail employees are here. Like, I could tell one was just frustrated because, like, he had so much stock that he was trying to put out and then still trying. But anyways, but ladies and gentlemen, this is a free flow episode, so welcome back. If you're listening on Spotify, go check us out on YouTube. That's the Donut Box Podcast. Or as I learned last week, you can still type in Trash Can Network, and that still works too. So, I have a couple questions that we're going to ask each other, and then we're just going to have a free flow episode. We're going to have a good time. Micah, do you have a pressing question that you were just like dying to ask?
Not a pressing one, but I got a few off the old top of my head. Do you have a pressing one? If you got one that's like burning on you, I'm good.
It's not burning, but I have a couple. So you can go ahead and ask.
Okay. My first one is very, very simple. Do you have a song or a series of songs you are going to work in the morning What are you putting on in the car on the way there? Do you have like some staples?
I would say it changes depending on like the season. So right now I'm listening to a lot of Texas rap. So I have a playlist called Swangin' Through Texas, right? Swangin' with no G. And it's a lot of Pimp C, Big X the Plug, Zero, Mike Jones, and so there's a song called Texas. There's a song called Solid, Still Tippin' by Mike Jones and Paul Wall,
From
Can't Change.
back in the day.
Yep, so that's kind of like on my playlist. Sometimes it just depends on the like day, but so when I used to work at the supermarkets over there in the hood, I would play I'm So Hood on my way to work every day, because that song hypes me up, dude. Like every time I hear it, I sing it, and then right when the beat drops, that hypes me up. I'm ready to go.
I don't know why. I still like, I don't know if I've heard DJ Khaled like probably from 2017 on, but like anything before that, like early DJ Khaled days and stuff like that, I like a lot of that. In fact, kind of interluding into what mine is, so I've got a 30-minute commute to work nowadays, like one way. So I'm definitely listening to a lot more music on my way to work. And I've noticed that it's a lot of Young Jeezy. Like Young Jeezy is definitely a staple for me. And then on top of that, it's I don't know. It's been a lot of rap music here lately, but like nostalgic rap music. But you remember that song "We Taking Over" with like everybody in it? It's got like a ton of
Yeah, I'm not
people.
crazy about that one, but you like that song.
Yeah, I don't know. It's all nostalgic. And then I don't know. I was listening the other day to Throw Some D's, and it's
Oh,
like I
yeah.
don't know. It's like there's a lot of those, and even I don't know why. Chris and I have talked about this before. Like there's a cache of videos that I'll go and watch back on YouTube. It's like okay, it's been a while. I'll go watch this one and whatnot. Same thing with music videos. Like I don't know why. There are like some that just like during the time and. I know some people talk about like, okay, early days of VH1 and MTV, like it was all just music videos. We kind of still had that growing up, like, 'cause I do remember seeing a lot of music videos. Like, I can remember a lot of like, okay, that came on TV and like vivid, like, I remember the music video for it. And so there's still a lot of those that, and I've noticed that a lot of my song choices that are my staples, either going to work or just kind of like in, you know, taking a shower, putting the music on or whatever, it seems to be a lot of those. That like I don't know, I saw the music video for way back when. I've noticed that too.
Yeah, I would say, and again, I was going through some things in July, August of this year, and I was just angry, and I put on Jeezy, man, and I like there was one day where I was coming home from work, and I know I'm a man of the cloth, but I was just mad and frustrated, and I put Jeezy on this one song, and I just sang it at the top of my lungs, like all the rap, and I know the like the song, every lyric. And so I was just singing it, and I was just like, it was therapeutic for me. And so Jeezy sometimes is like a, all right, like I'll never go
It's a
wrong with
thing.
Jeezy for sure. So my question is, and this might be a long story, but
That's fine.
talk to us about your tattoos and your story of getting your first tattoo, what the process was like, why you chose to get what you got, because I would say your tattoos, after watching Ink Master, I kind of understanding the styles. I would say yours are more like color,
Americana.
like American traditional, I would say,
Right.
like American,
Yeah,
maybe not American traditional, but
Americana.
color illustrative, I think.
Yeah. The tattoo artist, like he called himself an Americana artist. Like that's like kind of the style he went for. Like the really bold, vibrant colors, and that sort of thing. I'll show him here in just a second. But so the first one, I wanted to get my first tattoo when I was 15, 16, actually. And but in you have to get parental consent, and of course I couldn't get my parents to sign off on that. I remember you ready for this? There was a flea market in Georgia that I sold some stuff at. And my first tattoo, I actually had the guy, there was a little tattoo shop that was in the flea market. Think about this, flea market tattoo. But I don't remember. Oh, I do remember what the first design was, and thank God I did not get this design. You ready for this? So I think you would like this. It was going to be the state of Texas, but like the outline of the state of Texas, and then in the middle was going to be like a heart, and it was going to be like barbed wire around the heart with like blood coming out of the heart, basically like.
I can get behind one idea or the other, but those two together,
Together, it was quite a
not good.
lot. It was quite
Not
a
good,
lot.
yeah.
But again, I couldn't get them to sign off. I remember it was going to be like $80 or something, though. It was going to be pretty cheap. Again,
It's
flea
cheap.
market tattoo. Again, flea market tattoo. But didn't end up getting that. And then, so I always wanted a tattoo, really wanted one. And then my senior year rolled around and I knew, okay, because I was 17 and really early into senior year, I was going to turn 18. And so I was like, all right, now I don't need consent from anybody. Like I could go to the tattoo shop and get it done. And again, I was working at Boot Corral at the time, working as a salesman on commission. So I was making pretty decent money, enough to be able to afford a tattoo. And so I remember actually even talking with a friend of like, okay, what do I want? We even went through some really goofy ideas that ended up becoming like t-shirt ideas. Like the original, I'm going to tell them about this one. One of the original ideas that I had was it was Jesus, and he was throwing dollar bills, and it was like onto planet Earth, and underneath it said raining manna.
That's
and
definitely
then
more of a t-shirt idea, but
yeah, it's
still be a
definitely a
cool
t-shirt.
tattoo.
It would be, but it's just like wow. And then the other one that I remember, it was there was like God the Father standing there, and then there was Jesus, except they were dressed up, and this is so sacrilegious, but they were dressed up like pimps, like purple robes, like and whatever.
And did it
And
say stunt like my daddy? Is that what
yeah,
the is gonna
it
say?
was going to say stunt like my daddy, but pretty much it was like they were blinged out, and God the Father was standing like behind Jesus, and he like had his hand on his shoulder, and it's stunning like my daddy underneath it.
I don't think
Yeah,
that's like, I don't know if that's sacrilege. It might borderline be sacrilege,
it's
but it's a
yeah.
good t-shirt idea, not a
Oh, it's a
tattoo.
great it's a great t-shirt idea, but it's not a good tattoo. So went through kind of these went through some of these ideas, and so finally I decided, okay, the only thing that I could really, at least I was smart enough to say, okay, this is going to be on my body forever, so I want to make sure that it's going to be something that in 10 years I'm going to be okay with. And so, and then the other thing that I was contending with, I wanted to be a pilot at the time, and I'm still do, but the concern at the time, the industry's changed to where you can show tattoos more, but at least at the time when I was looking into it, it was like, listen, you don't show your tattoos. Really, you want to at least get, I wanted a full sleeve. You can tell where mine cuts off right here, and that's for a reason, is so that I can still wear short sleeves and it goes to about right here and you don't see any of this. But pretty much to go back to your question, what ended up happening, I decided to go with a like a an aviator's hat. At first, it was just going to be like an aviator's hat with goggles. And when I went to go see the tattoo artist, and it says underneath "till death," and basically it's just like you're a pilot till death. That's the whole point. And so when I went to the guy, he's a biker kind of guy, and definitely I would he's. Like he's a very nice guy, but like he could be kind of rough. And so basically he's like, yeah, I could do that, but I think what would be cooler, and especially me being 18, I was like, oh, I was all over it. He was like, we can do a skull with the pilot cap on top of it. We'll make the skull black and white. We'll do the cap, like the full brown cap with like blue, like sky on the goggles. And then, we'll do the till death till bottom. And in fact, I'll show you. If let me see if I can get this to you could see, I don't know,
Oh,
and
yeah.
twist my arm there. You can kind of see it there,
Yep.
but But you see the goggles on top there as well. And so that was my very first tattoo that I got, was that one there. And so I enjoyed the experience. I really enjoyed the experience of getting a tattoo. It was actually really fun. I'll say this though, a lot of people are like, oh, it's painful. I will say it depends on your pain tolerance. Everybody's got different pain tolerance. If you have a very high threshold, as in like, you can get stabbed and you're fine, it's whatever. And I've known people that, just they could get hurt and break their hand, break their arm, and they're just like, oh, that doesn't hurt. And then I've met some people that they get a paper cut and it's just the end of the world. So it just depends on where you're at on the spectrum there. For myself, I would say I'm somewhere in between. Like, I wouldn't say that it, like, yeah, things are painful and whatnot, but for the most part, I didn't have a painful experience. The biggest painful part is there's different kinds of needles, right? And as you can see from this top portion right here, it's one big needle and it's the outline needle. And
Oh, yeah.
so, once that, the only problem is there's kind of, if you know anything about shoulders, then forgive me, I'm not a medical person at all, but there's kind of a separation in your arm and your shoulder, right? And so the thing is, that needle went through kind of that, and I just remember that part being really painful. And so after that, I wanted everything to kind of go all in a theme. So I went more on the aviation stuff. I end up getting this one next, if you can see that one.
Yeah,
This
I
one
remember when you
here.
got that one, yeah.
Yeah, this one here. So this is what is called an attitude indicator, and that is, it's a gauge in a plane pretty much. And it's very simple. It just tells you, hey, are you turning? Are you going up? Are you going down? And you always want to fly straight and level. So I got the guy straight and level in here. And we kind of talked about it, and we were like, what about making it into some sort of like locket or something like that? And so that's, if you can see, it's kind of in one of those, and it's got kind of the chains on there as far as like maybe a pocket watch or something like that. Because at the time I was really into pocket watches. Like, I actually wanted to collect pocket watches. I don't know why I didn't get into that, but hey, I got the tattoo of that. And then the one after that, you can really see, kind of can't see this one, is it's up and down here. You can kind of see that. I can move my shirt. If I can move my shirt, I don't know if you can hear me because I
Yeah, yep.
was over the microphone. But that is the first, t the tail number of the first plane I ever flew. So it was like, okay, kind of a memento of doing that. And then the very last one, you can see it sticking out here, is it's a Boeing 747. But that sucker, that plane is so big. We initially had the entire plane on there, but he's like, your arm's not big enough. It's like, literally, your arm's not big enough because that thing is so big. So we decided to put half of it on there, and it's coming out of my skin right over here, and you can kind of see that. So it's coming out of my skin. And then the rest of it, I decided, okay, I want you to fill it in with clouds. And so that's the rest of this, is the cloud portion all through here and all through and around here.
Yeah,
So
so I was there for those three. I wasn't there for the plane. I remember you getting, or I wasn't actually, but I remember you getting. So I was there for whenever you got your first one. I remember being there for part of it and being like, oh man, that's really cool. And then I remember you getting the one on your inner arm. And then I remember you got that, but I wasn't there for the cloud filling or the airplane.
yeah, it was
No.
that cloud filling portion. It was interesting. I was just about to move from Lubbock. Like, I was like 10 days from moving from Lubbock. And when you have a tattoo, all this was done by the same tattoo guy. And so I was like, man, I want to get this completed before I leave. And so I remember getting the clouds put in between there before I left. But it was definitely one of those things. I enjoyed the experience. It's very interesting because if you told me, like, I at this point, there's not a ton that I want to put on my body that I have consciously here. But the thing is, if you were to tell me, like, hey, you're gonna go get a tattoo, I'd be pretty excited. Like, okay, yeah, I'm excited for the experience. It's kind of weird. It's like that weird sensation. It's a thin line between pain and like, hey, that feels pretty nice for some reason. Like, it's an endorphin release for sure, I feel like. And I always leave kind of feeling like, ooh, kind of gives you a little buzz and whatnot, at least in my book. Now I gotta ask about yours. So you've got a few, which,
I wore
ladies and
long
gentlemen.
sleeves today, so I can show some
Okay.
of them, but I can't show these or this one.
In fact, you know what I just realized? I think I wore the same exact shirt that I did last week. That's great.
It's okay. I hope you washed it.
I did. That's the whole reason I'm wearing it is because I redid the wash. I like this shirt. This shirt's very comfortable. So, anyways, but yours, so ladies and gentlemen, I was very shocked when, so Chris and I had a hiatus in friendship for a little bit. And when we came back and were friends again, one of the first conversations we had, he was telling me, he was like, yeah, you know, I got a tattoo. And man, I was pretty shocked. I was not expecting that. But since then, you've gotten a few more. What was your first one? And what was
So
that
my
experience
first
like?
one was up here, and again, it wasn't that I, so maybe when I was like in fourth grade, maybe I was like, ooh, tattoos are bad, but I never thought like people who had tattoos were like sinners or anything. I just didn't know anybody that had tattoos, and we talked about him. His name was Josh, is that what his name was?
Yeah.
And he had a like right here, he had like the tattoo from what was it called? Pirates of the Caribbean, right? The Jack Sparrow tattoo. And that was the first guy I ever knew that had a tattoo. And then when your parental unit got his tattoo, like I was like, oh yeah, like that was the other person I knew. So I never had a problem with tattoos. There was just nothing that I desired to get on my body that much. And so I didn't get my first tattoo until I was going through my divorce, and I don't know. And again, maybe it was like a therapy thing, maybe it was a freedom thing. Okay, I can get whatever I want, put it on my body. Because I remember she was like, "If you get a tattoo, you need to approve with me before you get it." And I was just like, "Okay."
Didn't she have tattoos? Not to get into the nitty-gritty, but didn't she have tattoos?
She didn't get
No,
any.
I thought she had one on her wrist or something.
She didn't get any until we were going through our divorce. So,
Okay, I got you. Not to get into that, but I was like,
yeah,
anyways.
anyways. So I remember my brother came out, my mom and my brother came out. My brother was like, my brother had already gotten tattoos, so he kind of already broke the ice of like, oh yeah, like he already did it. So my mom and I think he got tattoos while my dad was still alive, I'm pretty sure. So like it wasn't a big deal, like no big deal. So he came out and he was like, hey, like I know you're going through a tough time, I want to pay for you to get a tattoo, like that's my Christmas gift to you. And so I was trying to think like, what would I get on my body, like what would I get? And so I got a it's a cross, but it's like in the shape of three nails that are like, or it's actually two nails, so it looks like kind of railroad spikes. And then under it, I got Psalms 23, verse 4, just the reference that says, even though I walk through the valley of shadow death, I will fear no evil. And that was kind of a big, like, symbolism of what I was going through, just because I was kind of walking through the valley of the shadow. And we went to a tattoo shop in Lubbock. And I remember, like, sitting down, like, they put the stencil on, everything. And I remember talking with the guy, and I was like, so how long you been tattooing? He was like, oh, 8 months. And me and my brother just looked at each other like, what the heck? But luckily it was just line work. Like there was a little bit of shading, but like he didn't mess it up. And so that one was kind of like a big deal for me because that was my first tattoo. And so like it.
Which I got a follow-up question. Were you scared at like beforehand?
No, it was just kind of nervous because I wasn't sure what to expect. And my brother kind of talked me through it. And he had tattoos. And my brother has like tattoos, like not just on his arms, but like on his legs and like on his back and stuff. So like he kind of knew like what it was going to be like. And he was kind of telling me like, okay, this is what you need to take care of it. Like this is the stuff. So he really did help me with that. And he was like, it's gonna probably feel like a cat scratching you, but like this right here is probably one of the best places to get a tattoo, I would say, if you're gonna get your first tattoo. Like
It's
it's a
because
good place.
it's pretty tough skin. Like, I mean, it's pretty, you wouldn't realize it, but it's pretty tough skin to the point where it doesn't have a ton of pain. Unlike like the inside of your arm. The inside of your arm
Oh,
is a
that
totally different
hurts.
story. That's a totally different
Whole different
story.
story. I'll get into that.
Yeah.
So, I have six, about to be seven tattoos. So I'm gonna get a tattoo on my chest. I wonder how that's gonna be. I'm not sure. Hopefully it's good.
Yeah.
But they say the stomach is the worst. The stomach
Yeah,
is
I
the
can
worst, and
imagine.
the ribs are the worst. That's what they say. Oh, and probably the throat. But I, nah. All right. So then,
Yeah.
of course, you know how it goes with tattoos. Like once you get one, then you're addicted, right? Like you're like, oh, I have to get another tattoo. So then there was a tattoo convention, probably actually 2 months later, and I was like, man, like I love lions. Like that's kind of a fun fact about me. I love lions. And the reason why I love lions is, it's gonna sound weird, but like that's always been kind of like a visual representation of like who I'm supposed to be, right? Is a lion, and kind of like God is like spoken to me through scripture and prayer, and like that's how he sees me, and that's how I should see myself. Because and I'm still working on this, ladies and gentlemen, but I mean, I used to be a big scaredy cat, like scared to do things, like scared to get out of my shell. And so, like, that picture of that lion is kind of like a symbolism for me to like step out of my comfort zone, right? And so, I wanted a lion with a crown. And so, I looked at all the tattoo artists that were going to be at this convention, and I found a guy, and he was out of Dallas. And so, he did my lion, and my lion has a crown right here. And so it was good, but it was like 4.5 hours because it was like a lot of shading. And so, like, I remember, like, it wasn't bad, but I remember, like, by 2.5 hours, I was like, bro, I'm just ready for this to be done. Because he kept going over the same spots, like, over
Over and
and
over.
over and over.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm done. So then I took a break. And then, well, maybe not a break. Maybe it was like a few months late, like, this summer I decided to get another tattoo. Again, I was going through it, ladies and gentlemen, so that was my therapy. So then I decided to get this tattoo, which I don't know if you can see it. Oh, let me turn. It's from Lord of the Rings. So it's the sword from Lord of the Rings, and I've always liked Lord of the Rings, but in the story, the main guy, like, he's the heir of the king, and he doesn't want to be the king, but there was this famous sword that got broken that's supposed to like destroy evil and everything, and it's never used again. Well, the sword gets remade, and so like this is a tattoo to help me remember like even broken things can be used for a good purpose. And so like it's really cool. So I got this one done by a guy probably 40 minutes outside of Lubbock, and it was at his house. So like he had his own shop like outside of his house, which I like better because he had like TV, like it was more like
It was more
comfortable home.
relaxed setting. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a shop. And so he did that one, and then he did this one, my Jesus one right here. I never thought I'd get a Jesus tattoo, but like if you can kind of see, Jesus is like grabbing the hand of a person, right? So in the original picture, it's the story when Jesus is walking on the water, and like P Simon Peter walks on the water, but then he takes his eyes off Jesus and he falls, and then Jesus comes to like reach him back up. And so I wanted the tattoo for Simon Peter not to be there, but just a hand. So like it's a representation of me, like even when I feel like I'm drowning, Jesus still has me. And so yeah, so I got that one by the same guy. And then I got one on the inside of here that says unashamed. It's just letters that say unashamed. Kind of it's a symbolism of like my story of like overcoming shame. And then like my favorite verse, which is Romans 1:16, which says I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus. So that's and then this one right here, it's on the inside, but you can kind of see it. It's a lamp post. It's like the lamp post from Narnia. And so the symbolism behind that is like even in the darkest and coldest spots, like Jesus is still a light and I can still be a light. And so all of them have meanings. This one was the worst, though. I will say it hurt the worst. And the guy that did it, I think he had a pretty heavy hand.
Yeah,
And so
yeah.
like that makes all the difference. And so with tattoos, if you have someone that's a natural artist, most of the time they're not as heavy of a hand, right? And I've heard, I don't think I've ever gotten, no, I've never gotten tattooed by a female, but they say females most of the time they have lighter hands, like they don't bear down as much. And so it makes it not as like painful. And the funny story about this one is I actually had a job interview for the place that I'm at right now, and I was late to my tattoo appointment because I had that job interview because it went longer than I thought, and I ended up getting the job. And so kind of a cool story, but definitely probably my Jesus tattoo and my sword tattoo are probably my favorites, and then the lion one is really cool. There's a blank space right here, so whenever I have my first child, I'm gonna have a lion cub with a crown, and then I'm saving spots. So however many kids I have, then all the lion cubs will have crowns with their names on them, and they'll all attach to this one, which is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's kind of what I'm saving space for. I know when I have kids, like I'll want to put some for my kids on my body and whatnot. But
Quick question to your question. How was the response of other people when you got your tattoos?
Oh man, it was not good. So a lot of my family was very religious, and so the first tattoo I got, of course, I was 18. I was living at home, and my parental units did not believe me. Like I would told them, like, "Hey, I made the appointment. Like, I'm going to get this tattoo." Like, I full on told them, like, and even to the point where Chris knew the time and the date. Like, it was a thing. Like, it wasn't like a, "Hey, I'm gonna go get a tattoo." It was like a planned thing. And so I remember getting the tattoo, coming back home, and having it, of course, shrink wrapped and everything. And I remember my maternity and be like, "Oh my God, you actually did it." It's like, "What do you think? You think I was like just fibbing to you? Like I'm gonna leave and go get a tattoo and just come back and still not have a tattoo?" And I remember she was not happy about it. My male parental unit, I don't think he really cared,
He
but I
had
remember,
tattoos, so it
yeah,
didn't
he had
matter.
tattoos, so I don't think he cared. And then I remember the one who took the most offense to it was my grandmother on my mother's side. She was absolutely just devastated that her Micah could do something like this and mark his body and mar the temple of God that I am. And now I'm not a temple anymore because I put graffiti on it. And it's like, and still to this day, she does not like it. I went on vacation with her and I wore a tank top and she did not like the showing and whatnot. But it wasn't a fantastic response overall, but a lot of people accepted it. A lot of people were okay with it. And so I think what a lot of people were okay with tattoos, I've noticed it's one of two things. If it's stupid, people are like, "Okay, that I can't get behind that." Like I've seen some dudes have like a horrible Pikachu tattoo like right here or some crap, and you're like, "Okay, that looks really dumb." I think because it's tasteful and just like we
And
went
well done.
through and well done, and just like we went through and told you, like Chris's are very thought out. Mine are all very thought out. Like none of these, what I love about this, nobody to my knowledge has these tattoos. Like these were thought out by myself, like, and just there's small aspects to it, like the lettering right here on the back. If you can see that, it looks like steel plated. Like, and so I told him, like, "I want it blue, kind of like a steel plate with, and kind of that design." And so it wasn't just thought out. It was like we talked with the artist and said, "Here's what we specifically want. I don't want what everybody else has got. These have specific meanings to them." And I think, even if people didn't like them at first, all you have to do is explain it and be like, "Well, this is why this is. This is what this is." And they're like, "You know what? It becomes art at that point because it's like, okay, this has meaning. This is in depth and it's good to look at." Like a lot of these, I get so many compliments when I'm out and they're like, "What is your tattoo of?" I'll pull it up and I'll talk to them. And I'll even, the biggest thing too, you can't really tell it. I know on camera you can't really tell it, but the biggest thing that I always get is, "Wow, and how long ago did you get these done?" It's like, "It's been over 10 years ago." And they're like, "The color is still really, really vibrant on there after 10 years." Because normally it fades. And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, it really is." And I'm happy for that. But I think that also adds to the quality. The colors are still good. Everything looks really, really well done.
Did the color, because I'm about, ladies and gentlemen, I'm getting like the traditional like Texas outline tattooed, and I'm adding more some of my flavor, but it's my first color tattoo. So did the color make it more painful or not really? I mean, where yours is at is like a painful place anyway, so
Yeah, so the color, all of mine have been color besides the clouds. And what I will say about the color, so all of my color has been shading mostly. This is probably the one that has the most color because it's got red, it's got blue, it's got orange in here, and then it's got yellow around the edge. And for those, he used, and we're kind of going nitty gritty, but he used the shading needle, the one that's got like five prongs on there that are like, and so once you got to that part, it was okay. It went quick, but it was kind of painful because that five prong shading needle going up and down, up and down, up and down for a good amount of time. Like you said, it's fine at first, but once you start, and he has to go over the same area over and over to make sure that it gets all the color in there. You don't want to miss a spot and have a little, in my case, a little white patch in there because you will see
it's
that.
called the
So,
color not being packed in. I learned that
that
from Ink Master.
yeah, and so it's okay. It's just I'm sure you went through a lot of, like you talked about, the same thing with your lion tattoo. It's probably going to be a lot of the same thing except with color. It's just going to be that's just going to be the difference.
Yeah, we'll see. So
One
I'll
more
let you
thing
know.
on the one thing on the tattoo front. I just got one more question on that front. Was there any tattoos that you had thought about that you did not go through with? That's like, okay, I had that design. And it's like, okay, but after a while, you're like, you know what? After second thought.
Yeah, there's only one that and some of them are still ideas. It's just I haven't pulled the trigger on them, but like right here, because this arm is pretty much essentially blank except for my one little lettering thing right here, and then my first tattoo. But I thought about getting like Greatest Life Faithfulness and like lettering, but I wanted to get like a warrior, like a knight or something, like kind of like on one knee or something. But I've thought about getting like a portrait of my dad. I don't know, they're just ideas, but like I think probably the one was like the knight or whatever. Like I thought about it, but again, there haven't been any that I've like sat down and like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get this, and then change my mind.
I got you. I've only had one that I actually went to the tattoo shop and like had him draw it up. And in fact, he hit me up for the longest time. He's like, "Hey, I've still got this drawn up. If you ever want it, like we can do it." And this is before I met my wife. I was kind of in between that phase of I had broken up with my long-term serious girlfriend, and it was before my wife, so we were having a good old time, right? And I was really, of course, I'm really into aviation and everything. So I had a pinup girl idea. Like
Yeah.
it, and did you remember that one? Do you remember that one?
Maybe. I think you did tell me about a pinup girl.
So one, I'm glad I didn't go through it because of the pain. He already told me, he's like, we're gonna have to split it up between two sessions
Where
because this
was it
is
gonna
gonna,
be? On your arm?
no, it was gonna be right here, starting like on my
Ooh.
ribs. And it was going to go all the way down to like my hip almost. Like it was going to be like pretty full length of like my chest on the side here.
Nope,
And
nope,
yeah,
nope.
it was going to be all painful points. And he said it's going to be between 6 and 8 hours to do the whole thing. But I you want to know the design? This is, ladies and gentlemen, I know this is a family show, but and the design is kind of wrong. But it was this blonde-headed gal who was topless with like kind of a cowboy like leather skirt on the bottom, riding a bomb, and underneath it said ride 'em cowgirl underneath there, like
I'm
an
so glad you
old-fashioned,
didn't
like,
get that tattoo.
yeah, me too. But it was that very typical like pinup from the era, from like that time, like the blonde. In fact, if you've ever seen blonde bombshell beer, like there's a beer called Blonde Bombshell with like, and it's got a blonde who's like riding a bomb. It looked very similar to that.
Dude, like I understand people getting their kids' n names tattooed on them, but like when they get like their boyfriend's or girlfriend's name, like if it's your wife, okay, I understand. I understand 100%. Like that's different. Or if you get like the ring tattooed finger, okay, cool.
Okay,
Totally get
here's
it.
maybe I'm wrong on this. I feel like that is like it's such a bad omen. I have met very few people who have gotten a tattoo of like the ring deal or whatever, and then shortly thereafter, it's like they split skis. It's like it's almost like a temptation. I don't. It's almost like putting out there like, oh, you permanent? Like we gonna test this? And it's like, man, because I'm thinking of like three people off the top of my head who either got that ring tattoo or whatever. And it was just like 6 months after that, it was just like bam. And I'm talking in one situation, they were married for like over 30 years. And it was like they got that ring and then split skis. And so it's like, I don't know. That's why it's like me and my wife have talked about it. And it's like, I love you, babe. But I'm not going to do all that. I'll get my kids' names tattooed on me, but I feel like they're not like it's a bad omen and I'm not superstitious, but at the same time, it's like just to make sure that there is not some weird thing to it. It's like we know we love each other. We ain't got to put it on our body.
Yeah, or getting somebody's lips tattooed, right?
Boy.
Gotta love them, dude.
Boy, what's next? You got the lips tattooed here. You got a little teardrop right here. What's
Yeah, and
going
then you
on?
get their name tattooed right here.
Right over
Right
there.
on there, bro. Anyway,
Yeah.
sorry, that was a long conversation about tattoos, but everybody likes hearing about tattoos, and
Yeah.
tattoos are cool. I love seeing people. And again, like Micah said, they're good conversation pieces. Like I can share my story through my tattoos, and so it's a cool deal.
Yeah. I've connected with so many people just randomly, and even people that you wouldn't think would be into tattoos. They're like, oh man, that's really cool. And like, that's really different. And again, I think it goes back to what you have and things like that. If you got what everybody else has, I mean, I'm sure most people aren't going to be very, into it. But if you have something kind of different and out there, like, I feel
If you
like people
got
would
like
really
a
enjoy it.
pocket watch with the rose or the compass, everyone's got like a compass.
Praying hands.
I
Praying
mean, I do have a
hands.
Jesus tattoo, bro. That's
Yeah, but you don't have like the praying hands with the rosary. I've seen that done so many
true.
times. Bro, I wish, again, this is a family podcast. I wish I could say what was in those tattoo shops that have the little book that shows you like what other people have had done. Bro, that book was wild at what some of these people had done. And I am not going into that because that is not family friendly. But anyways, so my next question for you, you're a huge wrestling fan now. So like pretty darn big wrestling fan. Really, I wouldn't necessarily blame it on your parents because I don't think your parents would have not let you watch wrestling. I just don't think it was necessarily something they were interested in nor wanted to spend money on pay-per-view and things like that with. The question that I have, do you ever, because you're having to go back and watch history. So let me I know this is going to be kind of a long, drawn out question. So I'm big into football. I couldn't imagine, because I've watched it all these years, right? NFL, college, I've watched it from the other time. So when people talk about, okay, the David Tyree, like helmet catch and stuff like that, I remember those moments because I saw them live. How is it for you now being a fan, watching the history of something happening? Say in 2005, or even like the John's, like prime example, John Cena moment when he comes out there and it's like, we killed Osama bin Laden. Like a lot of people remember that WWE moment. You aren't watching it. How do you feel like catching up to it now, I guess? And do you ever, I don't know if it's necessarily regret because you had no choice, but do you ever wish like, hey, I could have watched those things live?
Oh yes, all the time. I do wish I could have watched those things live because I would have been totally into it. But you also have to think, when I grew up, and I know why my parents didn't let me watch wrestling. When I grew up during that time of wrestling, that's the DX, like Suck It days. That's when like on WCW Nitro, like the girls with the very provocative like dressing
Yeah.
and like the. They literally had in the early 2000s they're called bra and panties matches, and like you can use your imagination what those are like. So I mean,
Yeah,
and
I
then
guess I guess that's true because a lot of our childhood, not to cut you off, I guess a lot of our childhood knowing some about WWE and then WWF transitioning to WWE, it was definitely a Jerry Springer like atmosphere. Like that's what they wanted to bring. And so I think that I see what you're saying, but I continue though.
So yes, obviously there are times where I'm like, man, I wish I could have watched like John Cena live. And so it's different because a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I have this connection to John Cena, and I'm like, he's cool. There are wrestlers I have connections with because I have gone back and watched the matches, and I'm like, oh yeah, this guy is solid. Like Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels is my favorite of all time, and I didn't get to grow up watching Shawn Michaels live, or Ric Flair, like, you know. And so a lot of what I did to catch up is I would watch like YouTube videos on the history of wrestling, or listen to wrestling
Right.
podcasts of like, hey, this is what was going on, this and that. And so it is, I do wish it is different. It is hard, but like sitting here now, I'm kind of like, 'cause at the time you don't know that those moments are viral moments, but like obviously WrestleMania 40, which was this past April, is considered one of the best WrestleMania stories since forever, right? Like when Cody finished his story, like it was basically Avengers Endgame. And so I'm like, yes, I lived through that moment, but I'm like, what other moments have I lived through in wrestling that 20, 30 years down the road they're gonna reference it? Like obviously there's some stuff that's gone on behind the scenes, like with CM Punk getting into those locker room fights, and like legit, that'll be wrestling news and history. So it's kind of like, it's fun for the ride. Like wrestling is such storytelling. So the difference, like with football, right? Like you have a few of those moments, but like if you say, okay, the Chicago Bears, I'm just making this up, the Chicago Bears won the Super Bowl in 1982. Okay. All right. To most people, it's like, okay, cool, they won. But like, since wrestling is such long-term storytelling, like there's a lot of history you got to catch up on. You know what I mean? Like, whereas other sports, you don't have to catch up on as much history, I feel like. But because they'll in wrestling now, they'll use things that happened maybe 20 years ago as part of a storyline for now. So it's kind of a weird.
Well, I think that does happen, but it happens in a different way. So we all know the NFL is scripted. I believe it's scripted. I think it's very much like the WWE. They know who's going to win the Super Bowl. They've coordinated dramatic moments. Like it's definitely out there like that. But I think that because sometimes they do bring storylines from way back when. It just depends on. I think a prime example like the Manning family. So you had Archie the dad, right? And then you had Peyton and Eli came along, and that was early in our time, right? When we saw that happen early in our generation. And now what's interesting is for the University of Texas is Arch Manning, who is the third generation of Manning family. And so that's definitely a storyline of like, okay, we're seeing the entire lineage, and everybody wants to see Arch Manning play because he's a Manning. And so it's like there, I feel like there are some family legacy stories, not nearly as much as wrestling, because wrestling is all about the story. But I do think that there are definitely, storylines that they do play on. And every sport does it. NBA does it too, about the whole LeBron and then, Bronny, his son coming and playing on the same team and everything like that. It's all, there's a lot that's just pure storyline. But I do think what's very interesting about football being the sport that, I mean, everybody is young playing it, even in the NFL. Everybody's in their 20s. It's very rare you find guys in their 30s. If you do, they're very good. They're very good, and they've been in there for a long time. And what's interesting is seeing these guys be really well. And, okay, 10, 15 years ago, I was watching this guy, and now it's like a prime example. There was a guy named Asante Samuel. Maybe you remember that guy. He played for the Falcons for a little bit, and he played for the Eagles and all sorts of stuff. We're watching Asante Samuel Jr. now in the league. We used to have a referee, Sean Hockley. He was there for a long time. He retired. Now his son's doing it. So it's like we're seeing interesting. And so I think where the storylines come into play are for the people, and I think same thing with wrestling, or for the really, really diehards who are like, okay, I remember when this happened, or I know about when such and such happened, and now that has caused this to happen all the way down the line. Because even there are storylines about like the New York Jets, right? And it's like 20 years ago, this went wrong, and that's the chain of events that's gone all the way till now. You know, and it'll be, you know, things like that, and they'll use stuff like that. So I agree with you somewhat, but I think it's just different in how they do it. But I hear how it is. And the only reason, again, the reason that question came out is because being a football fan and it being somewhat similar, especially in the NFL sense, I couldn't imagine not having those moments. I do imagine it's just like going back and watching like you would, because I've watched NFL stuff from like the 70s, 80s, and it's like I just wasn't alive, so I didn't see that stuff. I'm sure it's just like watching those sort of things, but it just having all that history in my mind, it's kind of interesting to think like, okay, what if you missed all of that?
Yeah, and the thing I get frustrated with is people are like, you know, wrestling's fake, right? Again, number one thing that people say when they, and I'm like, it's not fake, it's entertainment. Like, they're still doing the moves, they're still doing all that, they're just entertaining you. Like, that's all they're
Well, it
really doing.
still takes a lot of athleticism. I mean, these guys are really, they're world-class athletes, and the majority of them are world-class champion wrestlers. I mean, you take a lot of these guys and you look at their history, they were national champions in college. They've wrestled, some of them have wrestled Olympically. Like, it's not like they're just out there screwing around and doing like a lot of it takes a lot of practice and a lot of work. So it's not just, it is truly a show. Like if you go in with the mindset of like, it's Cirque du Soleil, but kind of different, right? They practice for a show. They have incredible moves that they do. It's the same thing with wrestling, because the art of doing what they do and not hurting the other person, it truly is an art. Because I mean,
Yeah.
you could really hurt somebody with a lot of the moves that they do, and it, the fact that more people don't get hurt at it is quite remarkable, really.
Okay, and we might be going into the mind of Micah, so it might be a long. So you talked about how like Hitman and like Pirates of the Caribbean and all that are like movies that like were big for you, and again, we call it, me and Micah call it the book of movies, right? Like the little folder where the movies were just put in there. Why do you feel like now you just still kind of gravitate towards those movies, and it's hard for you to watch newer movies? Is it a comfort thing, or like, and if so, what are some of the other movies that were like maybe kind of a staple for you? Because I noticed that with you, like when you talk about movies or watch movies, you kind of go back to like the same movies, and a lot of them are movies that were in that folder.
Yeah, so a lot of it is comfort, especially because these movies, there was like 20, 25 movies in this thing. And so for the first year, you know, for 10 years of my life, that's all the movies you got, unless you find something on cable. So yeah, there is a comfort factor to it. There's also a nostalgia factor to it, because let's face it, a lot of these movies that were in the folder, some of them are mainstream, some of them are B-rated movies. So a lot of times it's not like you turn on TV and watch, see these movies come on TV. That, and then I think a lot of the problem is, and don't get me wrong, a lot of these movies that we're talking about, some of them are original. Like I'll go to Fast and the Furious. The Fast and the Furious idea, the very first one, that was a very original idea, because tuner cars and everything like that was the thing at the time. And there wasn't any movies about that sort of thing, at least not mainstream big ones. And so on that front, it's like, yeah, but a lot of these other movies were not, how do I put this? They didn't follow a lot of the same trends as Hollywood did
Yeah,
too.
cause I'm kind of like the movies you pick. They're kind of, I mean, they're not terrible movies, but they're kind of middle of the run movies. I
Right,
would say they're not like Academy Award winning.
and they're not like, okay, these were box office busters, and everybody won Oscars from these movies or won awards from these movies. Like, it's not those kind of movies. And so, I don't know. I think that it's one, nostalgia; two, a lot of Hollywood movies and a lot of these movies that you see, unless you know, okay, And I hate being like, yeah, I'm a realist. No, I don't want to be like that. But a lot of what I like to watch movies for is a little bit more of a realism aspect. Now, a lot of these movies that I'm talking about, Hitman in particular, is not realistic. A lot of the stuff that it is, it's an action movie, and you know, like, hey, it's a little outlandish. I can take a little bit that it's. When things get too outlandish, I will give you a prime example. Chris went and watched the new Gladiator movie, which great. Glad you went to go see it. It was like when he was describing it to me, the first part's okay. I get that. I get that. And then even when, you know, I've seen previews and other people talking about this, it's like, then we fill it up and fill it up with sharks. It's like, what? Hold on. Like, okay, you had me until you lost me. And I feel like that's where a lot of movies are. And I think the comfort value in knowing that, okay, the storyline is either going to stick very consistent, or hey, I know what the ending to this one is going to be like, and it's not going to be some crazy thing. Because there's a lot of movies where I come out of this and it's like, man, that was kind of a waste of time. Like, that was probably one of the stupidest. And we talk about the older Hitman with Timothy Olyphant. One of the prime examples of like a newer version of it, and this is also a B-rated movie, but they came out with Hitman Agent 47. And in a previous episode, I talked about how horrible that movie was. And it was just like, you have, I guess it's because you have these expectations of like, okay, here's the line that's going to follow. And it just doesn't. And you could tell the points where, I don't know. It's one of those things to where it's like, it's comfortable, the things that you know. But at the same time, I'm not a fan of how a lot of movies are made. And you know, kind of the choppy bits. Now I will say this, when you had me watch Shutter Island was a very good one.
Yeah.
Like one that I had not watched before that
It's a
was pretty
pretty
good.
original idea, concept.
Yeah, and
And
I
it's
think I,
good.
yeah, and it makes you think, and that's always a that's a sign of a good movie. If it invokes emotions or makes you think, then you know the acting was really well. But for me, there are still, like, I like Quentin Tarantino films, but again, what is the whole common denominator there? A lot of what Quentin Tarantino is going for is it's very raw and very real. Like a lot of it is not, there's not a lot of fairy tale, okay, this is kind of outlandish stuff to happen. A lot of it is kind of harsh, kind of raw, really real. And you know, I just think a lot of it, especially we go back to the Fast and the Furious example, the newer movies, and even past episode five or, you know, the fifth movie, it's just like, it's outlandish. It's Michael Bay film. It's like, geez, Alou. It's like, just stick to the original premise, but I understand that that theme is gone.
Yep. There you go.
All right. So this question. I know for a long time since I've known you, that there was a calling to the ministry and things like that. Now, along the way, there are other career opportunities that you looked into. I remember one phase, it was like, I want to go into the Marines, the military, that sort of thing. And I remember at one point it was, you know, President of the United States kind of going the political route. And then at one point there was also the police officer. And wanting to do that. Now, what would you say was the absolute defining moment that was like, no, ministry is for me. That's what my calling is to do as a job, not just like as a volunteer on Sundays and have a separate job from that. When did you make that realization, or did you have that light bulb moment of like, okay, I need to do this?
When I was figuring out, like, okay, what am I gonna do? I know that the police officer thing isn't for me, and now I need to figure out what I'm gonna do with my
Which
life.
follow-up question, what made you think, because ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you this, he was going to you were going to school to be a police officer. You were very involved in it. Like, I mean, you were doing school and was working nights, but at the same time, like, I remember him studying hard for the classes. There was a law class in there. I remember him studying really hard for that. So what was that kind of change of like, hey, this is not for me?
So this is around the same time that like my life would hit rock bottom and I was just kind of like lost, and I was like, all right, Lord, like I'm gonna do what things your way. So I still went to classes, okay? I still went to classes during that time. And I remember like coming up around the, because I was still working overnight and going to school, so it was a long day. But I wasn't working at Bucra anymore. So I remember probably April, May. I just remember like praying, and in my prayer time, the Lord was just, it was very clear, like, hey, this is the path you want for you, but this is not the path I want for you. And I was like, okay. And so like my spirit knew, like, okay, this is not the path I need to be on. Okay, this is what I wanted to do. It's not what God has for me. And I knew that was pretty clear. And I was like, I'm gonna finish up, figure out what I want to do. And so I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I remember like ministry was kind of always in the back of my mind, but I was not like, oh yeah, let's go. And so what's funny was, so I worked overnight with a group of probably 9 to 10 guys, and I was full time. And so on overnight crews, like the people around there, I would say are rough around the edges, okay? Rough around the edges because most people
Man,
work overnights.
it's overnighters. Like overnighters,
At a grocery store.
there's a vibe. Like the thing is, nice people, but like typically overnighters, it's a little rough. But go ahead.
Yeah, so, and again, I'm not saying this with judgment, but this is just, I mean, there were ex-convicts, stoners, people that just didn't fit in. Like, I don't know, people who were just kind of felt like outcasts. And I remember like having several conversations, and like, I never, like, I would talk about my faith if we come up in conversation, and it did come up in conversation, but people knew what I was about. Like, people knew I lived my life the way I live, and people knew that I had faith in Jesus. And so like people respected that. Like they were like, oh yeah, like we know he's not gonna cuss like when he's here. We know that he's not gonna go party. Like we and they respected that. And they were like, hey, we're having a party after work. Like we would invite you, but we respect you too much, you know, to not. And I appreciate that. Like they knew what was up. And so I remember them being like, several of them like, you know what, you should be a pastor. Like you should be. And I was like, nah, like I don't want to be a pastor. That's cool for other people. And they were like, they would call me their pastor. They'd be like, you're our pastor. Like, and these were people like, some of them didn't really even believe in Jesus, but like they'd be like, yeah, that's the pastor right there. You're our pastor. So I remember having one specific conversation, like, and again, other people had talked to me about it, and like there were just confirmations through other people, but I was just like, nah, like being a pastor is not it for me. I remember one conversation specifically w with my friend Austin, which I'm still friends with. He's also my wrestling friend, and he was like, bro, he was like, you really need to think about like being a pastor. He was like, you teach people without teaching people, and he was like, you know what you're about. Like you stand on your beliefs and your values. And he was like, you would be a really good pastor. And it, I don't know, just hearing it from him, like I was like, something clicked. And I was like, okay, like let me start pursuing this. And I remember having conversations with my dad and about like going into ministry. So I started looking at schools, and yeah, it was probably around that May time. Yeah, it was probably end of April, early May, and I went to go tour. I was gonna look at colleges, like what do I need to do? Looked at doing Lee University online, looked at going to Southwest Theological Seminary, which is in Fort Worth. And I remember I actually took a tour there, and what was cool was like if you did a campus tour, like they actually kind of had a place for you to stay overnight. So I remember like I went there, toured it, and was like, I'm not sure about this, like maybe, because I was still gonna have to finish my undergrad, and just like, what are my credentials in ministry even look like? Like, what is that gonna be like? What am I gonna do? And like, still on that ministry journey. And I remember like visiting my dad and mom, and I remember like going to the bookstore, and my dad was like, okay, like, let's look at getting you like some pastor, I call them my Jedi manuals, but like some pastor books, like, let me look at that. And so, I remember that, and then my dad passed away in January, and I took a month to be with my mom and everything, and then I got connected with people at church that was like, hey, like help out in youth ministry. I was just serving wherever I could, and then like probably the moment to answer your question, this is a long, long answer, but I remember the first time where I was like, okay, this is what I was made to do. I started in prison ministry. Okay. I started in prison ministry, and they were like, okay, you're going to get up there and you're going to give like 15-minute sermon, 10-minute sermon. I remember first sermon I ever gave, 10 minutes, and it was about Rahab. Okay. About
Okay.
Rahab the prostitute. And I remember, and if you guys knew me before, like the podcast and like public speaking was not a thing for me. Like getting up in front of people, not a thing for, like Micah talked about it a couple of episodes ago. I was the guy that was behind the camera. Like,
Behind the scenes, like that's how
yeah.
he preferred it too. Like even acts of recognition, like say, okay, hey, we're gonna pull you up on stage and say thanks for all the work you're doing. Didn't like that kind of stuff.
I still don't like that kind of stuff. I'm just a little bit more comfortable with being on stage now, just a little
You're
bit.
right.
I still get nervous. But I remember like preaching to 70 inmates in a prison in Snyder, Texas. And I remember that being the moment of like, okay, this is what I was made to do. So I started doing prison ministry, started doing youth ministry. And I remember like I would get up there and like I like even just the host moments that was like 5 minutes. Like, and before a person, like, I get up there with a microphone and I get off the stage and people are like, where did that come from? Like, we didn't know you could like talk like that. Like, you know, you got an anointing on you. And I was just like, okay, I guess, I don't know.
You're right.
And then started teaching in kids ministry. And like, that's when I was like, oh yeah. Like, and all this time, like I'm going to school online to like be a pastor and everything. And so figuring out, okay, like, do I get a job? Like, what am I gonna do? But like, I knew ministry full time was like a job and a career path for me. And then even the part where I got divorced and I stepped out of ministry for a season, like, even then, like, I was wrestling with like, what am I gonna do with the rest of my life? I thought being a pastor was off the table, but like, once you found what you're made to do when you're not doing it, like, everything in you is like, ooh, like grinding, and you're like, I wasn't made. Like, there's nothing wrong with stocking shelves at United, but like, I know that there's something else out there.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, being with you in that time, it was hard because you didn't have any purpose. And
Yeah.
Chris, he's a lot like me, in that facet. You got to have some sort of purpose. It's not one of those things to where we're not the kind of people that you could be like, okay, I want you to do A to B every single day, and you're gonna collect a check for it. There's got to be a bigger goal. There's got to be, okay, we need to start figuring out how A to B to C works now. There's got to be something further than that, or it's just upsetting because it's just like, okay, there's no progress being made. And so I think that was where a lot of it was just there was it was fine. It was a job, but where's the means to an end? This is just we're stocking shelves. Somebody's going to buy corn tomorrow, which means I'm going to have to stock that all over again, and I collect my check. And so there just wasn't anything purposeful there.
Yeah, and even like when I started moving up the ranks, even I mean, and the one thing that, and this is not like a brag on me, this is a brag like on the Lord, but like everywhere I've gone, like the Lord has just given me favor, and like I've gotten promoted. I mean, I work hard, don't get me wrong, but I have favor, and so like I was moving up the ranks, and I thought, okay, once I become a store director, like, is that it? Like, is this it for
Yeah.
me? Like, and I thought this was it for me. And you're gonna judge me and you're gonna think this is weird, but I was watching a Boy Meets World episode, right? And so his dad was a store director, like a grocery manager. And he has this moment in his life, like later on in the series, where he's like, is this it for me? I'm just a grocer. Like, what else is my purpose? And I had that thought, like, and then like trying to apply for jobs and being like, okay, guess this is not it. I just knew like God had more for me than just stocking shelves. And there's nothing, I'll go back to stocking shelves any day of the week, like if the Lord asks me to. Like, I'm not above that. But at the same time, like Micah said, trying to find that purpose and all that good stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, and now you're about to have that Kurt Warner story. I was stocking shelves. Now I'm about to be a starting QB, in the NFL, in the pros.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I completely understand. I get you,
Yeah. All
but
right. My question is kind of, it's a little bit similar to the question, but just with a different twist. So, and we've kind of maybe talked about this in other episodes, but if your kid self could see you now, is there anything that they'd be surprised about? Be like, oh, wow, I didn't know I was gonna do X, or I didn't know I was gonna lead this, or I didn't know, what would that be?
wow, you're not a pilot yet? I
On
think that's
the positive side, not the negative side, the
right,
positive
not the
side.
negative. Well, and like the thing is, kid me wouldn't be upset with the fact that I'm not a, like, if I explained the whole thing, they'd be like, okay, I get where what's happening. I just wouldn't ex have expected that. Like, I think it'd been like, oh man, you're almost 30 years old. And like, if you would have told 15, 16 year old B, like, hey, you're gonna fast forward to 30, what are you doing? Like, that's the answer. Like, hey, you're a commercial pilot and you're married. But path went a little different. I think for me, and I'm not gonna talk too much about what I'm doing work-wise right now, but the current position that I'm in, I recently got a promotion, and like, for a 29-year-old to be in the position that I'm in is not very common. And like, again, I'm not trying to be humble brag or try to like be like, oh man, like this is, but what's hard now is, if I were to say like, hey, we're not a pilot, but we're doing this instead and working with the government and doing what I'm doing right now, they'd be like, oh wow, like how in the heck did you get from there to there? Because I mean, shoot, even me 4 or 5 years ago, I'd have been like, shoot, how did we get from here to there? Because that don't make no sense. That's a meteoric rise. Like, that's not a, and I'm just talking about career-wise, right? But to answer your question, I think, yeah, there would be some shocks, and there'd be some like, okay, I thought we would be different, in like a different spot. But overall, I think like myself at a younger age, if they were to take a spotlight and say, hey, this is what's going on, I think be happy, be like, hey, everything's pretty held down. Like, I mean, there's a few things that could change, but overall, like, it could have went a lot worse from here to there,
Would they be sorry, not they. They them. Would little Micah be how do you think he would feel about you being more of a homebody and more like reserved now that you kind of cuz to be honest, man, I'm not saying like you push everyone away, but you, I mean, you have good reason. You kind of like takes a while for you to,
And that, and what he's also alluding to is that used to not be me. Like, it was one of those things where I wanted to talk to people. Like, I wanted to have to talk to everybody. It didn't matter who it was, and I'm not really like that anymore. Little Micah was a little bit more,
he'll talk to anybody who'll listen.
yeah, but like, I'm also like thinking about little Micah in my head, very opinionated and very strong opinions. And so the thought that came to my mind is, it's like, if you could show 8, 9, 10 year old, even to accelerate that to middle school, like 12, 13 year old, and be like, this is you now, I'd be like, what happened to you? I think that's what the legitimate answer would be, like, what happened to you? Like, you were wild and crazy, man. Like, we're wild and crazy, and it's like, and now you're all calmed down, and it's like, because it that would be the shocking part, is like, man, you're really calmed down, and like, you don't do nearly the amount of just crazy, outlandish, outbursty kind of things that you did do. And so I think that's very different. I don't know. I think it would be, I don't think I'd really recognize myself from then to now. I think it'd be like, wow, that's really weird. And I think a lot of that is maturation, because in understanding time and place. But I think a lot of it is just, you go through lots of life experiences. Like, humor definitely gets me through a lot of life experiences, but not nearly as, like, for a long time, I had to use that as just getting through moments, even tense moments. And a lot of times, that's why Chris and I are friends. Tense moments, you make a little joke about it, it makes the moment a lot less tense. or you share a look of like, oh my gosh, and he's like, yeah, I know, right? Or even I do that with my wife or whatever, and it breaks those, and I still have those things, but it's not nearly as much as I feel like at those ages. It's like I wasn't very subtle. It's like, well, that's an awkward moment. Da, 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 and you'll be, and I'll be just shooting off at the mouth. And I've learned over time, like, hey, that's not particularly good. Like, yeah, it is when you're with your friend, be like, well, that was awkward. And it's like, haha, yeah, it was. But when you're in a whole entire room with other people and they're the ones making it awkward, or maybe it's not awkward to them, or and you call that stuff out. And I would always, it was, I tell me if I'm wrong. Everything that I said, there was no question about what I was thinking in my mind, because I just told you. I just told you exactly what it was. And I think that's a lot of what's changed, is I don't say a lot what's on my mind. A lot of that is I think about things a lot more, and there's a lot of, like, Chris gets my genuine self, and a lot of other people get my genuine self. And I'm very genuine on this podcast. I'm not saying that, but I still am very careful in what I say, and the exact thoughts that I'm having are not shooting out of my mouth. I think that's the biggest difference.
It's funny because, and again, not so much, but it's like we talked about on the podcast, we've kind of flipped. And because of my job, I have to be more social now. Again, people still drain me, but like on a Sunday morning, I can turn it on, be like, hey, how are you? Or like if we're in a table and no one's talking, like I can be the extroverted one. And so,
Right.
like, dude, 9-year-old Christopher would be scared out of his mind, like crazy. And then, like, I think I even just thinking about, like, again, getting up on a stage and preaching, or that, like, that would have been like, whoa, like, what the heck? But I think even thinking about Easter, right? Like, 16, 17-year-old me could see us doing that, but like, definitely 9-year-old, definitely
No.
not. And then,
Yeah.
like, just being not confrontational, but like having hard conversations. And I think the Lord has used that this year for me, because I've had to have a lot of hard conversations where
Yeah.
before I would just ignore it. Like, I'd just be like, well, we're just gonna let it go. And like, even 19-year-old me, like, if I had a problem with you, I didn't say anything, I just let it go. And it was very passive aggressive. And so, like, I'm not perfect, but I'm better. And so it's different. And like, kind of going back to the pastor thing, so like my dad wanted to be a pastor, and that was a big desire of his. And there were times like where he went to Bible school and this and that, and I know he felt a call of ministry on his life, but to like see like the dreams my dad had, and like I'm living those out. And that's like, because I'm sitting here like, man, like if like and there and it gets me sad, because I'm like, man, I wish my dad were here to see me. Like, not, and I'm not bragging on me, but like just where the Lord has brought me. Like, if my
Yeah.
dad could be like, man, you're a pastor, and like you're doing what I always wanted to do, like I know he'd be proud. And so
Yeah, for sure.
and I'm reaping the benefits, because I mean that man bought a lot of like commentaries and study books, and like I have all those. And so I'm very fortunate and blessed that I do have those, because those do help me in my job. But yeah, like it's funny, because like 9-year-old us would not recognize ourselves right now.
No, and even, you see in the intro when it's like we came up with a variety show called the Krispy Kreme show. It's like even us at that phase of life wouldn't recognize what's going on. It's like, yeah, you've got a podcast, and it'd be like, okay, I can see that happening. Like, okay, I could see that. But the content that we do, the way that we deliver it, everything like that, it's similar, but it's different. And that's a good thing. It's just, again, I think we wouldn't recognize ourselves at all. Be like, really? Okay, that's interesting. All right, do you want to do one more question each?
Yep, I only have one more question anyway,
Okay,
so.
perfect. Perfect. Me too. So out of all of the things that we have done as far as trips, and experiences and things like that, is there one that stands out that's like, okay, and this is a hard question because there's so many that stand out for different reasons. But I'm just curious. It's kind of like a psychiatrist with the ink blot thing. It's just like, when I say experiences, What comes to mind here?
Probably the I would say the best ones, definitely when we went to Dallas slash Arlington this last time, that which was 3 years ago, when
Nice.
we went to go watch the Rangers. And like I felt like, granted, when we went to Dallas when we first moved to Texas, like, yeah, we're kind of adults, but I felt like this past time was like our first adult trip where we had like
Yeah.
money and like as
We went to
adults.
a baseball game. We had a lot more control of what we could do. We had a I felt like we had an adult plan. Like we actually planned everything very thoroughly to the point where it was like, man, we knew exactly who was taking us where, at what point, and what time we needed to be there. Like we were very, very on point. It's interesting you say that, and this is where our minds are very, because I was thinking about that same trip. And I don't know why, but I was thinking about the food on that trip, and
It
I don't
was
know
really good.
why. We went to, what was that place called?
Babes.
That's Babe's with all the sides, where it's like
Babes
unlimited
is really good.
sides, and which they opened one here where I'm living at, and I still hadn't been, but it's like maybe I'll have to go back. But I just remember like loading up on all the sides you can want on that deal. And then we went over to that seafood spot and ate there a couple
Oh,
times
yeah.
as well. And it was just, yeah, no, I agree with you. And Chris and I, we've kind of talked about this too. I don't know why this is so fun. You can watch TV at home, you got TV at home, but there's something just so nice about going to a hotel and being like, let me flip on the TV. It's like you got
Let
the
me have
same stupid.
cable, old-fashioned cable.
It's just like, and I know this sounds bad, but it's like I don't have the responsibilities of Hulu or Netflix. They pick it for me. Comcast or whoever, DirecTV, whoever, they're picking. Now, I mean, channels nowadays, it's like, okay, we're doing a 24-hour marathon. Like used to be, it was
Yeah.
like marathons, but now it's just, straight to, I
Straight
mean,
thing.
True TV is pretty much, Impractical Joker channel at this point. But
Yeah.
it'll be cool stuff like that. Another one that really comes up for me is speaking of Six Flags over Georgia when we drank all the NOS.
Yeah.
There was a lot of lesson learning experiences and trips. That was one of them. But I don't know why they're all Six Flags trips. The other one that I remember is driving to Six Flags when you got your Buick.
Oh
That
yeah, that was a
first.
big one for me, yeah.
That was
That
like the
was like a
first ever
fun,
road
like it was
trip.
a fun trip. Nothing crazy happened, except
Besides
you
me
broke your
breaking my
phone.
phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I broke my phone while I was trying to flirt with the ladies, and that was quite upsetting. And then the other thing, I don't know if you remember this on that trip. We were driving in the Buick, and my grandmother calls, and she was like, "Where? What are you doing?" I was like, "Oh, I'm going to Chris to Atlanta. Just the two of you?" Oh, she freaked out, and because Chris was 17, I was 16. And she just wigged out of like, oh, y'all are by yourself and taking a long trip to a big city. It's like, it ain't no big deal. It ain't no thing. Like, it's whatever.
I think another one would probably be as a whole, when, and this is bad, ladies and gentlemen, I just talked about being a pastor. But when we would skip church to go out to eat, like that was fun for me. Like I enjoyed that. Or like even after we moved to Texas, like when we would just hang out and like play Xbox and just
Yeah.
go out to eat after church and no responsibilities mainly.
Yeah, that was fun. And then of course we had plenty of boot corral times. The one time that I'm thinking in particular, and there's a few people that are probably watching this that are gonna laugh at this, is whenever a dust storm would roll in, and I remember there were several times this big dust storm was coming, and we had to like get the trash into the trash can. I just remember standing on all these boxes in a trash can, and all these customers are walking in this store, and we're hollering at them because dust storms in West Texas, they call them haboobs. I think that's like the Arabic word for dust storm. And so I don't know, but I just know that we were standing in that dumpster and we would yell, "Haboob, get inside. It's dangerous." We would yell stupid crap all like, yeah,
This
it was
is
just fun.
again, this is the last one I'll share. But the day that we were bored and we decided to go to different places and just prank them, and mess with them. Like when we went to like the jewelry store and pretended like I was getting engaged and I was buying a ring. When we went to the car dealership, like all that, like just going to different places and like messing with the salespeople, which,
Screwing
like we
around.
said, it's
It's
come
that's
back
what we used
now.
to. Oh yeah, that's what we called free fun, free entertainment right there, is
It was
because we would
free.
go in there
It
and it
was
would take
fun.
like it was free and it would take like 30 minutes to an hour most of the time. And you'd always plan it real well. I remember our buddy, one of the buddies we had at the time, every time we would go to the car dealership, we would always either take his truck, or I remember at one point he had like a Mercedes that one of his family members had. So we'd always take that onto the lot, and all the sales would be all over you, boy. And it was harsh because we would take test drives, and we would get them all the way into the little office where they'd be talking numbers, and we would decline at the last minute.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it's
All right,
terrible.
last question. And we were talking about this before the podcast, before we started recording, but like, and I'm unofficially diagnosing us both with ADHD, okay? I firmly believe I have it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
What helps you focus, and then what are like some of the tics or like things that kind of like trigger you that or maybe overstimulate you that are like little tics or triggers, and how do you overcome them?
So that's a really good question. I'm still learning a lot of these things. I think I'm ADHD. I've always thought that too. I have a hard time focusing on a lot of things for long term. And another thing that I think is a key diagnosis is I don't like to start things and finish things all in one go. I've noticed I will start 30,000 things and work on them, and then I'll go from one thing to the other to the other, and eventually get them all done. And then it's like, okay, I got all these things done. But I've noticed that most people will take one thing, they'll go and they'll do it all the way to completion. I'm just not that way. And it could be anything. Like I'm talking like if I'm texting Chris back and that is a task on my to-do list in my mind, I will halfway text and then I'll be like, I got to think about that. I'll hop over to something else. I'll work on that for a little bit. Da, 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 and then I'll put that on pause. I might go back to the t Chris text or whatever. I've noticed that getting to the triggers, I've noticed that it gets to the point where it's almost like when you're doing that and you have too many things going on. I'm in IT, so I'll equate it to this. It's like having a browser with too many tabs open. You got all these tabs open, you got all this stuff going on, and it gets to the point where it's like you get overwhelmed, but you don't realize it at first. And you're sitting here like, I don't know what's going on with me. I feel weird. I don't know. I'm getting very irritable. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that I've just gotten myself into way too much. And I've started way too many things that I need to either say, okay, these items I've started, but really I don't need to do them right now. And that tends to help because you go, because for some reason in my mind, and maybe this is your mind too, I make up these things of like, it goes from I would really like to get this done today to no, this is getting done today. It always starts as that real innocent thought of like, okay, I would be happy if I got all of this stuff done. I would be over the moon if I got all of this stuff done. And then before you know it, it's like the over the moon items are now, no, that is your to-do list. Like you will be over the moon today and we are getting all of this stuff done. And so a lot of times it has to be either me talking with my wife and saying, hey, I got myself into too much. I need your help because there's a few things that you can take care of that is just freaking me out because there's too much stuff to do now in the amount of time that I need to do it. Or again, I'll go through my mind and say, hey, what needs to be done today? What does not need to be done today? Like this podcast, for instance, we'll record it. I'll edit these things. And there will be some times where I'll say, if I can get this thing edited today, I'll be happy with it. And even like last week, I had to say, it's okay. You got it 95% done. You're literally to the point because you have to watch for the triggers too. You have to watch for the point where it's like you're actually not getting work done. You feel like you are, but you're actually screwing things up and you'll have to go back and do it later on. And so there's a lot of things to watch for, but I feel like I'm kind of getting to a place to understand, hey, my attention is on way too many things. And so, and I don't know, again, going back to the triggers, I think that's when even little things start getting to me. Sounds, noises, the dog, my wife, they'll say things and it'll just be like, you're just at your wit's end. And it's hard because you're like, I don't know why. Really, there's no reason for it, but it's just because you've opened way too many tabs. And even if you're like myself, it might not even be things that you're actively doing, but it might be future planning, right? I need to think about the podcast for this week. I need to think about this trip that I'm going to take. I need to think about this business deal that we're doing. And it'll be one of these things 30 steps down the road that you're figuring out in one of the layers of your mind. But all these things have built into now you got 30 million things going on, including stuff you're trying to figure out up here. And so it can be hard, but you have to literally stop and start closing some of those tabs and be like, we're not focusing on that. We are focusing on this. And you have to start parsing things and get it down to just one or two things. Like that's the long answer to that.
Mine literally, and this is gonna sound really bad, but Red Bull does help me focus, okay? So
Really?
it really does, like, for some people it might excite them high, like it helps me, 'cause I'm that way too, 'cause I'll start my day, okay, today these are the big three things I need to get done today, right? So then I start working on those things, and then while I'm thinking, oh, I need to do my expense report, oh, I forgot, and if I don't do it right then I'm gonna forget. So I'm like, okay, let me jump over here, let me do my expense report real quick, and then I'll be like, oh yeah, now I need to jump back to this big thing that I was doing. And so one thing that, and I don't know if this is it for you, but like I'll be driving and I'll get an important text or email, and in my mind, I have to respond immediately. And so, like, I'm respond, and I don't text like while I'm driving, but like at red lights, and I'm like, okay, I need to respond at a red light, and never fails. Anytime I need to respond, I don't hit a red light. Like, and so I'm driving, and so I'm
Yeah.
getting like frustrated because I'm like, I need to get this text done. I need to get this. And I'm like, dude, like I, and so then I'm like stressing out, and then like once I get. And things like that, or like my wife will like, try to grab my hand. I'm like, please don't touch me because I'm overstimulated. Like, I just need to like chill out. And same thing with you. Like, I can't rest until like I'm all done and knock those things off. And then I'll feel bad because I'm like, really, I needed to get that done. Like, it's okay if I don't get that done. That thing's not done till 3 weeks from now. But in my mind, if I'm not getting it done today, I'm like, man, I was lazy. I didn't get this done. Like, this and that. I don't know. You guys might self-diagnose me, but diagnosis, but it's really like jumping from one thing to the other of like, and even you guys can probably tell on this podcast, like I'll start a thought and then another thought jumps into my brain. So then like I'm on that thought and then I don't ever finish my original thought. So it's kind of like I don't know, it's weird.
No, I on that front, I understand you too, because a lot of times what happens is I'll have a thought and I'll have another thought. The problem that I have, and maybe you have this too, is my thoughts are on way ends of the spectrum. It's like this is way over here, and then my next thought is incredibly random because it's way over here. And so it tends to be a little interesting. But I've also noticed that on top of the work and the tasks and things like that, I've noticed a lot of the times, if there are too many people or too many people talking over each other or things like that, even kids' environment. I remember even whenever I was in school, if it got to the point where you're in class and I always felt like a loser dweeb for this, but it's just like I wouldn't tell people to be quiet. Internally, I am, but when the teacher wouldn't have control of the class, and you know how like kids. They go from like level to level to, and it just like keeps going up. And before you know it, they're just wild. And now everybody's loud, everybody's shouting over each other because you can't really hear what's going on. And then finally, the teacher was like, all right, y'all are being too loud. You need to whatever. I used to hate that kind of stuff because it would just overstimulate me to no end of like, everybody shut up, like, stop. Like there's just too much going on. There's too many conversations going on. And even I've noticed that as an adult, if, like sometimes I do have to attend social events where there are hundreds of people and things like that, which is fine. I can, like Chris, I can turn it on. I can be incredibly social, but I can't be in those environments for too long because it just drains me just so fast.
Yeah, and my mind will be jumping from to three different conversations. So I'll be having a conversation with you and this person will be talking to me, but then I'm hearing this conversation over here, and then I'm hearing this conversation. And so my mind is like going through all three conversations, same thing, talking, and then like, I don't know, maybe I'm not trying to make jokes, but maybe I do have the tism. But 'cause like I'll get mad if someone shuts the door too loud. Like that makes me mad. Or like there's just something in there that, and then like, or if like a motorcycle or a car revs its engine too loud, like it makes me upset or like angry. And I'm like,
On the same line, I don't know if you're like this too, but what frustrates me is when somebody is in another room and you'll, and I'm guilty of this too, but you'll say, hey, if in the case of my wife, like, hey, babe, what's, I need this, whatever. And then hear them like yell from the other room, huh? Or something like that. I don't know why that just drives me up the wall. It's just like, fine, I'm gonna walk in here and have this conversation with you because I hate yelling between rooms like this crap. Like it just drives me up the wall. I don't know why. And it's just there's a lot of things, ladies and gentlemen. Don't make me go into why I think I have the tism, because I think I would check some of the blocks.
well, on that note, thank you guys for going along with us on the ride. Put it in the comments. What do you guys think? Self-diagnosis.
Yeah, let's see what the commenters say. It's like, you know what? I've got a degree in psychology, and I can't tell what the heck you guys are. Y'all are wild. I don't
Yeah,
know.
but thanks for listening. Check us out on the Donut Box Podcast on YouTube. Trash Can Travel on the Instagrams, Facebooks. Got anything you want to add?
Man, I think you covered it. We go like, follow us, go see what's going on. We've got a ton of fun stuff coming out on all of our ends there. So come see us over there and like and follow us. And we're super excited for next week. I can't believe it's the new year, man. Oh, we're getting to the new year.
2025, new year, new me.
Shut up, Cheryl. We know you're still on meth. We should put that video at the end.
We
I'll
should
find that
put
video,
that
put that
video on
video at
at
the
the
end.
end. I love that video.
I'll say this in front of the entire crowd before we get off. I thought about another segment or like a short segment of like Mike and Chris's video of the week, and just like including like a video clip of like one of those videos or something like that. And that would definitely be one of them. But anyways, I'm ready to sign it off. How about you?
Yeah, it's time for the starship to take us out. So I'm Chris,
And I'm Micah.
and this has been the Donut Box Podcast.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here beside you, want so much to give you this love in my heart that I feel.